The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the Key Biscayne Independent. Portions of the following program were pre-recorded.
And again, I think of how, I think of you.
Live from Key Biscayne, this is Antisocial, the podcast that distills the clutter of those angry chats, swirling rumors, rumbling masses, and political intrigue into something more refreshing. I'm John Pacenti.
I'm Thomas Loam. Yo, I am back!
Oh my God.
That's right. I'm back, everybody. I am back! And we're back at the M Network. Will is on the board. Will, are you back?
I'm back in this.
John, we've never worked together before. We're probably never going to work together again, are we?
This is refreshing.
So I have a question for you.
So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home sweet home, I want to give you a kiss.
Well, what'd I miss?
So much. So much.
It's a sleepy little island. What could possibly go on?
Can it be a little more sleepier? A little sleepy? Maybe just a little?
Yeah. We've never worked together. They hired you after I left.
And immediately I was thrown into the into the frying pan.
Yep.
You know, we had the crazy...
If you just took me out for a drink, I'd have filled you in on all of this, man.
Yeah. It was kind of bait and switch, right?
Yep. Yep.
So what did you miss? You missed the insanity over the village's vision plan, which was a non-binding document, which people thought was the end of the world.
Yes, that's because it was a conspiracy by the woke mob to turn the village into Manhattan, I believe.
Yes, Manhattan.
Was that correct?
Not Brickell.
No, Manhattan. Yeah.
Yes. We had the condo fraud arrest at Emerald Bay.
No, Emerald Bay. By the way, Tony's not here. Are we inviting Louisa and Jennifer and the whole crowd on? Because they won't talk to him, but, you know, I'm good with all of them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll call them later. We'll have them on the show.
You're absolutely awesome. Invited okay. onto our show.
All right.
And then we just got finished with the budget, which was also another, soap opera.
Did Fausto make a campaign speech?
Several. Segarola was really, really into it.
That's awesome. I love it.
And then, you know, we got this drainage project, which the price keeps growing. It's now up to $310 million.
All right. I see where this is going. I'll tell you what. Let's put a pause button. We have guests in the studio. You've done great today, by the way. You've booked all my favorite people for my first show back. In the studio with us is District 7's Commissioner Regalado. It is so great to have you back. This is... I don't know if they knew or not that I was hosting, but it's great.
No, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's great to be back. Always a pleasure to talk about Key Biscayne, and always great to be on after the budget. Yeah, I don't want to weigh in on that. That's not my own budget.
Yeah, you know why? Because that budget is a show. That's why.
Happy to talk about all things county.
It's good to be past budget season.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, pick us up to date. You have a new rezo for the month.
Yes. So a few things. Obviously, we're going to talk about all things Key Biscayne in a little bit. But in terms of countywide, I have been elected now for 3 years. I can't believe it's been 3 years, but here we are.
I can't believe it's been that short of a time because you've done everything.
Like, there was a lot to do on Key Biscayne.
Wow.
That's true. I've been catching up. I'm very proficient. I'm very proficient. But my first resolution at the Board of County Commissioners was for neurodiversity, and we started the training for the police and the different departments. We started with the libraries. Remember, I spoke to you guys about that like 2 years ago. And now we're going into a second phase. We started it last year talking more about employment. But this year, and forevermore, the county will celebrate October as Disability Employment Month. And it's really about disability awareness around employment. We've been really focusing on adult opportunities. There really aren't many after 22, and changing the mindset so that parents and caregivers and people who are neurodiverse consider employment a possibility. Because for a lot of people, once you get the diagnosis, that's like off the table. So we've been trying to change that mindset and provide programming. And we actually started, we're going to be launching a bunch of great things in October and really highlighting the work that we've been doing at the county and throughout the community, the partners that are doing this work. But we actually hired Urban Impact Lab, which you guys will remember from COVID.
Absolutely.
Did amazing work with evictions and really putting together resources. And they did an amazing survey of like where Miami-Dade County is in terms of resources for adults, where people have the needs, who's doing this work. And then we're going to be launching another great project with them. So we're going to be providing people with actual resources, programming, and these different pilots that we've been working on so that we can start planning towards that. And one of the things actually has to do with Key Biscayne, because Coral Gables, that's also in my district, has a wonderful disability committee. And one of the things that we're doing is we're bringing an item to create a disability committee in Key Biscayne, in Pinecrest, and in South Miami. And they're all going to be under the umbrella of District 7. Why is that important? Because we have so many parents that have needs, but they have no place to go. So if a parent gets a hold of an elected, they may be able to do one thing. You know, they can call me, I can make a call, you know. But really, they need a space where they can have these conversations. And the Coral Gables Disability Committee has been so impactful that those parents have actually agreed to shadow on these other committees to help these municipalities kind of get going and establish their goals and set their procedures and how they're going to communicate back to the commission, what they're going to ask for, what type of accountability has worked and hasn't worked, and then how they're going to work with the county so that we can have a district-wide approach to this.
That's
work.
That's awesome.
Are you working with It Takes a Village KB?
Of course, of course, yes. of course. We've been working with them. They're amazing. We've actually done several events with them. One of the issues is obviously the school board issue, you know, but just in general, the programming, you know, and trying to figure out where do we start and what should we focus on. So Corey Gables actually started this committee because Craig Lean was the attorney at the time, and he had a daughter, and then there was some people in the police. They started with the training, but, you know, creating a board where the family members and the caregivers and people can come and present and everyone can kind of have a seat at the table has been really impactful for Corey Gables. And there's accountability because they meet every month. And they go to their electeds like every month, like, hey, have you done this? Because unfortunately, what happens to us in this community is, you know, for autism in particular, like in April, everybody dresses blue, you know, throws a picture out and says that they support autistic people. That's great, you know, but there has to be a conversation about one thing is not discriminating against neurodivergent people. And another thing is true inclusion. And then within inclusion, we have inclusion for the sake of inclusion and then inclusion that provides opportunity, right? So what we want to do is inclusion that provides opportunity, not just inclusion that kind of checks the box, right? So, you know, every community is different. South Miami is also interested in doing this work and Pinecrest. We have great elected officials that are really interested in helping parents. We just want to make sure that the resources are aligned, that we're not reinventing the wheel, that we're tying them into different organizations that are doing this work, and whether they become a chapter or they do it themselves, you know, they have that connectivity through the disability community.
How do small companies like mine help?
Well, in terms of employment,
I just offered up the M Network, by the way. We're all in.
Phenomenal,
how do we help? We
phenomenal. You know, for in terms of employment, if you're interested in doing the employment and employing, you know, reach out to us. That's going to be part of what we're rolling out. Like, these are the businesses. And the idea is to showcase the businesses that are doing this work so that parents and caregivers and supporters can support those businesses and say, look, you know, you did this wonderful thing. You've employed someone. You've given the opportunity. And look, you know, backing up a little bit, we're all neurotypical, right? So for neurotypical people to talk about jobs is very normal. for neurodivergent people, it's like talking about another planet, right?
Right.
Because this is not something that they're exposed to from a young age. In fact, quite the opposite, right? Parents are so concerned about who could take advantage of them, you know, what the limitations are. So it's a very insular thing. And these are not conversations that you have around the dinner table. In my family, it was different because I live with two autistic people, right? Like, I'm the freak. I always tell people, like, I'm the one with the problem at my house, right? I'm the one that's, like, constantly searching for neurotypical people.
Maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, we talk about autism, we talk about neurodiversity a lot, and I showcase them, you know, in my social media, and I've always taught them, you know, to be proud of who they are. Intellectual diversity is a thing. You know, different people with different mindsets, they have amazing skills, they have amazing abilities. And I'll tell you one story when I talk about employment. You know, my daughter is in the culinary program at Easter Seals. My son is now in a program that I help create at Kendall Campus that's doing stackable credentials for data analytics. That's amazing. But I took my kids on a cruise. I took them on MSC. And when I first said it, people were like, oh, my God, like, who takes autistic people on a cruise? But it was actually, I did a lot of homework, and it's a very, like, low-key cruise. It's very, like, quiet, you know? It's very organized. There's a lot of routine, which is I knew would work with my people. And what sold me on MSC in particular, and I don't have nothing to do with MSC. Like, I pay full price like everybody else. But what sold me is that they had an evening where they were going to have a dance party, and it was like a headphone dance party where everybody got to listen to their own music. And I don't know if you know this, but most autistic people like wear headphones, you know? So I knew my kids were totally going to dig that. They were going to get that. They were going to feel included. And in fact, when we were on the ship, my son like looked over the balcony when I told him we were going. He's like, Mom, you didn't tell me everyone here was on the spectrum. And I was like, not everyone here, just a few. But I took them in the, there's like a tour that you do under the ship. And you see like how they wash the clothes and how they make the food. And we did like the kitchen.
I want to go on that.
It's super cool. It's actually on Netflix. It's called like under, like MSC, like under, you know, so it's like the bottom of the, it's super cool. I'm like, I love like dirty jobs and all that kind of stuff. So that's like totally my
right,
jam.
That's awesome.
Right.
I love
that's like
that
my
stuff.
Jam. I'm always like, how do they do that? Like I watch like Undercover Boss. Like that's my thing.
That's cool.
So obviously I've raised children that also have this bend. So I took them when we were at doing the kitchen stuff. Like, you know, obviously my daughter's in a culinary program. So I was talking to her about it. My kids immediately gravitated towards this young girl. She must've been like 22 years old that was making wraps. And, you know, so I went over there and they were like, oh, you make wraps. And she's like, yes, I make 2,800 and whatever wraps like a day.
Holy smokes.
And then my son's like, are they all the same? And she's like, yes. And my daughter's like, that's awesome. And I'm thinking, as a neurotypical person, that sounds like the third ring of hell, right? Like, why would you punish me like that? Why would you not like me, right? Like, what am I going to do making that many wraps? Why are they all the same? Can I change it up? Like, I don't know, every 100? But for a neurotypical person, you know, that's an amazing job. So in a world where people complain about the lack of consistency and stability, I offer you a workforce that is excited to be there, loves routine. In fact, the more routine, the better. So it's just about working out the kinks in terms of educating people and providding them with a support system and providding them with like peers.
Good
on
you.
So that's what we're going to be talking about in October.
Very excited. That's awesome.
Very excited. Very excited.
Well, I guess we should segue into
transition to Key Biscayne.
Key Biscayne. Well, you got some news on the golf course to tell us,
yes,
right?
Well,
this is breaking news. I think this is a scoop, is it not?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, remember, I've been going through my list of things that, you know, needed to be done at Crandon. Obviously, we actually put in an item so that we could talk about pickleball at the tennis center. So we're waiting on that timeline for that. We're on it, pickleball friends. We're on it. So, and the tennis center, there is actually an RFP, too, about services. So we're working on that. And there's another thing that might happen, too, with the tennis center that would be great in terms of the maintenance. I can't reveal, but there's another thing that I'm working on. But there was this long list of maintenance projects that needed to be done in Crandon. And a few months ago, I went before the commission and talked about like the parking that we were fixing, you know, the water spouts, like all these different things that literally had been on the books for like 17 years, right? Like, like when maintenance is due. So now we get to the golf course. So now the golf course is long, long overdue, and we're going to be redoing it. We're not doing anything spectacular. But we are open to, you know, thoughts on it. But it does need maintenance. It has been a very, very long time since the county went out, you know, and cleaned it up. I think we've maintained it as best that we can, but it definitely needs like a refresh. So we're excited about that.
So are we talking about new greens?
Yes.
Redesign? Yes. Fairways?
Definitely talking about new greens and about replanting and cleaning up, because there's a lot of dead things that, you know, I mean, they're just not pretty, right? So just cleaning it up, looking at the flooding.
Like trees. I gotcha. Sorry. I'm from New Jersey.
Yes.
You say we're going to clean the area up and we're going to get rid of the dead things. I'm like, yeah, wait a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's it could use some love. I don't think anyone that's ever played the course hasn't looked around and thought, like, this could use some love.
It used to be a premier course. They used to have the senior tournament there?
Yes.
So you hoping maybe to get that cachet back?
Yes. Well, I mean, in order to us to have that conversation, first, we have to fix it, right? So I can't sell it to anyone in its current state. But obviously, one of the things that we would like is for it to get more use and for it to be ranked higher. So that's where we're starting. That's where we're starting. And we are going to do it all at once. I mean, there was a lot of questions about like the phasing of it. Like, do we do half of it? Or no. We're fixing all of it. And we're going to be actually doing a presentation before the commission where we're going to roll out exactly. Yes. We got to take it to our mayor and commissioners first. And obviously, that's a great way to do it because it's open to the public and then everyone can see it. So we're working on that presentation.
Timetable at all? When will you be talking to the commission on this?
I think probably like next month we were looking at.
That's pretty fast.
Wow. Yeah. So we're working on it.
You heard it
definitely
here
before
first,
the
folks.
Holidays. Definitely before the holidays.
So you got to be careful on these redesigns. Let me just tell you a quick little story about West Palm Beach. So they redid their whole golf course, right? Huge. It took forever. And they had this big driving range, right? Big, netting up and everything. So they open it up, and those balls were going right into car windows.
Really?
So, yeah. They had all this design and everything. They had to shut that driving range down and redo.
So that's a good segue to the Rickenbacker, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Well, they're the only cars that are going near the golf course.
That's true.
So I hear you're killing all the trees on the Rickenbacker. You want to talk about that? Where were you on the night of?
Yes. Yeah, let's talk about the tree homicide, as it has been lovingly referred to by my lovely Kings Cane residents.
I don't want to. Listen, they are passionate. They care.
No, and listen, it's wonderful. And we are happy to hear from them and happy to explain it. So a little bit of background on what we're discussing. So this is the other side of the Rickenbacker that has that nasty fence, you know, the chain link fence that has been closed forever. Mm-hmm. The reason that it was closed is because it was contaminated, in part because the county was burying sargassum. So it had a lot of issues. It had a lot of invasive trees that were doing a lot of damage. So the first thing we needed to do was take out all the invasives. So yes, some trees were lost in the making of this show, but none of them were natives.
But they deserved
it. Right. No, none of them were natives. So we mulched them. So we didn't, you know, we tried to make the best of it. We took them out and we mulched them. Everything that we took out was invasive or sick or both. Right. And now we're going to replant. So now, number one, the fence comes down and you're going to get a fence similar to the one on the other side. You know, it's going to mirror the other side. The landscaping is also going to mirror the other side, although going to be a little bit more landscaping on this side because it's narrower. This is not an area where we have a lot of space, you know, for cars and, you know, food trucks and the type of thing that you see on the other side. But there are going to be entry points. It is going to be open to the public again. We're going to put in mature planting, and there is going to be some cobblestone and some areas there. There will be trash cans, right, so that people don't litter. So it's a good thing. I know that it was complicated for folks to see, like, all of that, like, destruction, but it was necessary in order for us to, like, clean the slate and start working on the replanting and getting that open. It's been closed a long time.
Two questions.
Sure.
One that you opened up by mentioning the sargassum. But first, these are Australian pines, right? Tell our listeners why these are such bad trees.
They are bad trees. Yes. They are bad trees. So Australian pine, similar to like Melaleuca, they just take over an entire area. Every time the wind blows, right, the seeds from an Australian pine hit the ground and sprout new. And they just kill everything in their path. They kill the local plants, the local trees. You know, I was actually at Turkey Point recently because we have a project over there with water and sewer where we're using reclaimed wastewater to cool the nuclear plant instead of having them take water from the aquifer. And at Turkey Point, I mean, they have a daily battle with the Australian pines. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, they're how quickly they spread in that area and how much damage they do. So all over the county, we're really trying to eradicate them. You have never seen a tree that promulgates as quickly and as fast as, I mean, it really is like shocking. It really is shocking. So that's why we kept, because we're like, why couldn't you keep like the tall one in the corner? No, 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 no. They're very dangerous. You can't keep any of them. They all must go. And we actually have to comb the area, you know, very carefully to get all the seeds out and to ensure that none of them, you know, they really are giant, enormous, vicious, vile weeds.
Yep, they're weeds.
I feel very strongly about this.
Tell us how you really feel. Yeah,
and during hurricanes, they are
super dangerous.
Super dangerous.
Because they're not from here, so they just keel over, right? I mean, because look, I don't like palm trees. This has been like a thing at the county commission. I'm not a fan of palm trees. They're not real trees. They're actually an herb. They don't provide anything for the environment in terms of flooding mitigation, you know. However, they are native, which means that while they don't really give much to the environment, when a hurricane comes, you know, it's not as dangerous because they're native to here.
They really are big weeds. Yeah. They just bend over.
Yeah, they just bend, you know, but the Australian pines can really do a lot of damage.
So this is your campaign slogan? I hate palm trees?
No, but I will say my Cuban father was horrified when he first heard, because what happened is I took him out of the comp plan, like, count. So when you have to put a certain number of trees, like, palm trees don't count. I consider them like an accessory. Like, if you want to put them for yourself, that's fine, but I need a certain amount of trees, and I need them to be like good, hardy trees
that give shade,
yes.
provide oxygen and suck up carbon dioxide
and lower the temperature, right, in terms of microforce.
Moving down the road,
yes,
we got the bear cut, right?
Yes.
So give us a little bit of an update there.
So that's moving forward. You know, the county allocated the funds. You know, we're moving forward with the project. We should actually be seeing that in the next few months. It is what it is. I mean, like I said, I have a list of projects for Key Biscayne, and I just keep moving them, right? I just keep moving them. It's not ideal, but it's better than doing nothing.
Right. And, I mean, the engineering on fixing a bridge is... pretty impressive.
Yes.
So I'm interested to see how they do that. Key Biscayne is very much involved in this project. They have a seat at the table, correct?
Yes. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And by the way, Key Biscayne has been doing some great work in terms of like the flooding and the stormwater and tracking it with like ACOM, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's really been important for all of us to continue that communication. And the county is actually looking to that pilot program to see if we could do similar things countywide.
I have one last question for you. It's a political question. Do you mind? You don't have to answer it. You could say no comment if you want to. There's a lot of things going on, like a mayor's election that we've been wondering about you in. And then if Carlos Jimenez dives in, are you going to maybe take that District 28 seat? Or what's the future? What is the Commissioner Regalado future look like?
I am running for reelection at District 7. I want to be your commissioner for 4 more years.
I want you to be our president. Can you do that, please? You get things done. We need somebody like you. All right. Commissioner Regalado, thank you so much for being on. It was always a pleasure. You made my first interview back thrilling.
Thank you. And for all things Key Biscayne, follow us at Commissioner Regalado on Instagram and sign up for our newsletter and stay tuned.
And We are back on Antisocial. I'm Tom Mosloom.
And I'm John Pacenti. For our last segment, we're going to take a deep dive into one of your favorite topics.
Latex?
Politics.
Latex. Oh, anybody- okay. Yeah. Latex seems... that I thought we were in Keep Biscayne mode. I was talking about the latex group.
Yeah, anybody, the chat group. Chat group. You call latex the anti-tax group, right?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. No, okay. Yeah, all right. So what do you got for me?
Well, joining us today is... to talk about local, state, and national politics is renowned pollster, strategist, and MSNBC political contributor Fernand Amandi.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah. That's all, you got all my favorite guests today. You really did a great job.
Thank you.
That it shows you care.
I do care.
Fernand, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be back, especially after that very kind introduction, John Pacenti. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I love surprising Tom. That's always my favorite part of the show, a surprise for Tom.
It is. This whole show has been one big surprise party for me.
That's all it is. It's like, welcome back. Welcome back.
This is going to be the one and only time you allow me to do this. After that opening, you guys are going to never have me back. Anyway, let's dive into it.
Let's start with local. The chickens are kind of coming to roost for the city of Miami.
about time.
About corruption scandal.
It's only about 25 years overdue, but better late than never. Goodness gracious!
What do you think? Is this really the moment we've been waiting for, or is this just sort of the start of a new era of a revolving door of dumpster fires?
You want one hope is everlasting, Tom. But I think we've seen this before. There have been periods where we thought we have turned the corner, and then found ourselves again with the commission, with the Suarez, the Carollo, another one of these characters there. So we will see. But it's certainly, I know, long overdue for those of us who care and even reside like I do in the city of Miami, that has been acting as a city, in essence, a municipality that is really a disguised criminal syndicate, a sense of impunity, a sense of just being able to do and get away with the most egregious things. And finally, to see the law come down and some justice be served, even if it's in the short term, first with the $65 million judgment against Commissioner Joe Carollo, and secondly, with the indictment of Alex Diaz La Portilla, some hope that we have turned the corner.
Now, have you heard that Diaz La Portilla's mother is now doing spots for him on Spanish radio?
What is it? The refuge of the wicked is to hide behind mommy. So, yeah.
Have you heard about that? I mean, I guess she's saying that it's the woke mob.
I actually heard the ad.
We should have pulled that sound. That's a miss. We needed to pull that sound and have Fernand translate for us.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was pathetic. I mean, to hide behind your mommy, somebody who's in his mid-50s, and had a spokesperson say that the mom is crying and God will punish those that go after her young and ethical son who has been wronged like they've wronged President Trump. I mean, just really pathetic. But on brand for Miami.
Well, that's the problem, is we need to change that brand. And really, I'm really praying that the door opens up for some bold folks, a bold slate of candidates who are going to run on a platform of getting rid of all the corruption and stopping this nonsense once and for all. What are the chances, Fernand? Just so you know, Fernand, you and John could vouch for me. What did I do when Fernand started talking?
You poured some alcohol into your coffee, which I was stunned.
This is the conversation that drives me to drink, Fernand.
Well, I mean, all of us who have called Miami home for years, it drives us all to drink. And I think you hit it on the head, Tom. I know we've talked about this in the past, but I have maintained, like you just said, that the way to bring about change is not one seat at a time. You've got to do it through slate, a sense that the community as a whole has had enough, and you're going to bring in a brand new generation of brand new people that are running, not legacy people, not fourth and fifth and sixth generation of the political dynasties, what I guess would be the political equivalent of the Nepo babies, but rather people that are dedicated to the idea that we have to change the culture, we have to change the perception. If we're going to grow up and be a big boy, big girl city, We need a new new type of leadership, a new generation of leadership that is committed to ethics, transparency, ideals, accountability, and efficiency and expertise. And sadly, we haven't had that in a long time.
All right, Fernando, I'm putting you on the spot. Name names. Who are these people? Let's just call them out right now. If you know who they are, let's say it. I think you're one of them. When are you going to run?
No. The beauty of this approach is it really just it's the slate. It's the change movement that will draw people. It could be a complete unknown, or it could be people active in the community. As long as they're committed to the idea of principles that they're going to run under, and everyone will abide by those principles, that is what should call the people to service. And I think if that happens, if people feel their safety in numbers, they're not going to be alone with the target just on their back, that's where I think you'll start to see the community step up.
Well, you know, you mentioned it's a culture of corruption where these political leaders think that, you know, it's just one big grift, you know, either to line their pockets or line the pockets of their friends. I mean, but that's a big shift. I mean, to get rid of that culture, I mean, you got to have basically everybody replaced on the commission.
Yeah. Let's talk about the good guys, Fernand. At the county, we just had in our A block Commissioner Regalado on, and she's definitely one of the good guys. She gets things done. She walks the walk, as they say. And I asked her point blank if she was thinking about running for county mayor, as we all have speculated she might. And she maintains she is staying in her lane and running for reelection. What say you? Do you think that's true? Or do you think she's running? Or do you think she's going to let Carlos Jimenez run and slide into District 28 congressional race? How do you think all that plays out?
I mean, it's a good question. I've got to take Commissioner Regalado at her word. I mean, she's always been, you know, very forthright. So I if she said that, I believe her. And I think maybe it's also the calculus on her part that this probably isn't the most opportune moment for her to mount a candidacy. I mean, she did run countywide for mayor before against an incumbent. That's always a more difficult race. And I think this one in particular, that specter running against Daniela Levine-Cava, the current mayor, who is very popular still, according to the public opinion polls, and dovetailing on a presidential ballot where you could very well have Donald Trump represent the Republican nomination again. And in Florida, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, I think it's also going to have a counter effect. So I think she's making the calculus politically that this probably isn't the best moment for her because she's really only got one more chance, I think, to run viably countywide.
Wow, really?
Well, I mean, like I said, she ran before and lost to an incumbent.
Yeah, but she was an unknown then. I mean, she was Thomas's daughter at that point. Now she is her own person, and she's got a crap ton of good stuff under her belt.
I don't disagree, but, you know, if you're going to run countywide, as you know, Tom, I mean, it's become very expensive to run countywide in Dade County. That, you know, what used to be $1.5 million to $2 million.
Oh, yeah, that's chump change now. They spent nearly $1 million on the key.
That's exactly right. So, you know, you're looking at raising anywhere between $5 and $7 million. And if you're going to run against an incumbent, you know, you almost have to raise double that. And, you know, that's a big lift. And I think in her mind, which makes a lot of sense politically, if you're just thinking about it tactically, you know, she doesn't want to get into a race where she's going to have to raise that kind of money and then potentially come up short. So people say, well, you know, she's had two cracks at it. This last time she was well funded. That's it. I think she'd rather look at an environment and an opportunity where she will have less resistance, and that's certainly the case when you're running for an open seat.
So let's move on to the state level. What do you see in the future for our governor on the presidential race?
After his presidential race crashes and burns due to apathy, what happens now? He comes back as a lame duck.
Well, you know, I guess polling shows is that he still has a lot of support in the state, despite the book bans and everything.
Yeah, but he terms out. He can't run again.
But
the question really here, to use two contemporary Republican examples, is Ron DeSantis Scott Walker or is he Mitt Romney? In other words, Romney, as you remember, ran for the Republican nomination in 2008, came up short. Did not do well, but acquitted himself enough in that race so that he prepared himself in 2012 and was able to close the deal that time. Of course, he did come up short against President Obama, But that would be one model. The other model is Scott Walker.
But Fernand, that's because you and I were working on that Obama campaign. That's the only reason.
Well, details.
I'm teasing.
But the question is, has Governor Ron DeSantis, to use a Happy Days reference, jumped the shark? For those under 50, you know what I'm talking about. Like, has he done such a poor job in this race that he has been exposed and basically ended his political process? If you made me bet, Tom and John, I would say yes. I think it's more Scott Walker than Mitt Romney.
I understand he's out of money, too.
Yeah, because his campaign should, like, whoever's running that campaign has committed malpractice.
Absolutely.
I mean, it might be the worst run campaign. And I don't blame DeSantis for it other than hiring those people, but it's hard to know.
I mean, he hired a bunch of, I don't know how else you can say it, but a bunch of fascists.
He's overhandled and under-messaged. His messaging is all over the place outside of anti-woke. That only goes so far until you could get me a job and bring inflation down.
He had an ad with Nazi iconography, man. I mean, who does that?
Well, haven't we all?
Well, I'm going to be Mr. Cliche today, but, another Florida cliche from the Cocaine Cowboys era is I think he got high on his own supply, meaning that he started to believe all the BS of Florida and that, in the bubble chamber of Florida, which he controlled completely, that was the model for a national campaign. And as Tom said correctly, I think it was just a fundamental misreading of the race and of the moment. And then his unwillingness to take on Donald Trump.
Well, he thought Donald Trump was going away. He thought Donald Trump would be wiped off the ballot.
Yeah, he must have.
And that's never going to happen. Let's get to the presidential election.
That might happen, by the way. It might happen.
Let's stop right there. Because if that does, you think that might be DeSantis' strategy, that he thinks that...
all of them. Whole stage of Republicans.
That's their only strategy. They're trying to be the last man or the last woman standing.
Trump is 60 points up on some of these people.
That's correct.
DeSantis's poll numbers went down after the last debate.
RFK Jr.'s poll numbers are better against Biden than any other Republican against Trump.
Really?
Think through that.
Wow.
So Fernand, what do you think of the other side of the... Well, let's go to the middle. Do you think this is the year that a third-party candidate can actually make a dent? Could a third-party candidate win the presidential election? Or if not, could they make a big enough dent to start rattling sabers and start get people to coalesce around a centrist party?
Well, if by making a dent, meaning could they make a spoiler dent and tip the election one way or the other?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Well,
whether it's can a third party win? The answer is no, I don't. I don't think that is where we are right now. And the reason for that, Tom, is because, like it or not, in a lot of people's minds also, the election really is a question, a binary question and choice about whether we want to continue in the 250-year tradition of being a republic and a democracy that is bound by the rule of law, committed to a peaceful transfer of power and respecting the majority and the minority, or do we want to understand and recognize that in order to maintain power, we may have to do things that have not been done in the American tradition to keep that? And I think that's the question. Are we going to go down a fascist route, or are we going to stay in a democracy?
Yeah,
as long as that is the case,
Fernand,
you're
a Democratic pollster, and I love you for it. Those are Democratic talking points. So I'm going to let you have them. I think you're overblown. I think it's a little shrill for this show.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I think he's spot on.
Well, that's because you're a Democrat, too. You guys are all, man, oh, man.
Woke mob.
I reject that I'm looking at that through a partisan lens. I mean, I'll put it this way. If it was Joe Biden who was saying the sort of things that Donald Trump and the Trump wannabe contenders on the Republican side were saying and have been saying now for years, I would be leading the charge against Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. It just so happens, and I think John would agree, that the only people rattling the fascist rhetoric playbook are the Republicans. I mean, I know it's an inconvenient thing.
I disagree with you.
There's no doubt about that.
I think they're all rattling it. I think I hate them all. You know that about me. You know I think they all suck. Every single one of them. And we didn't even get to Kevin McCarthy, which was what I went to lean with. But he's sort of irrelevant.
He is.
He's just a body count in, you know, the train wreck that is American politics.
He is, Mr. Irrelevant.
I think there's a false equivalency in that notion. I mean, we're now seeing in real time, and as this conversation is happening, the Republican Party has proven before the eyes of the country and the world it cannot govern. We have done now something that is unprecedented in American history. One party has thrown out of its own caucus the Speaker of the House from its own party. They have shown that they are for nothing while being against everything. And if you look and you go down the list, all of these moments that we've seen have been provoked by the Republican Party of recent memory. Unfortunately, because I used to be a Republican growing up, I remember the days of Reagan and George H.W. Bush and being the more sober, fiscally responsible party, but at the end of the day was sacred with the American tradition of democracy and the peaceful transfer of power. We haven't seen that anymore.
All right. This Republican Fernanda party Mondi. Oh, you got one more question, John?
No, I was just going to thank Fernanda for showing up here.
It was a great homecoming, Fernanda. Thank you so much. I'm going to let you go. I know you got things to do and Democratic talking points to spout, but I love you, and you know I love you.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye, guys. We'll be back right after this to wrap this thing up.
And we go down the trails to the north point of the Bear Cut Bridge. As the sun flies, itching your head as you return back home. And then the next day, you say,
and we're back on Antisocial. I'm John Pacenti.
John, I'm Tom Mosloom. Okay, so as we led the show, you started running down the litany of things that has been going on since I was last on the air. But I'm curious, before we get into that, and we will, you've had a little bit of time. You've covered our fair village. What's your impression as the new guy?
My God. I got to get people to talk to me on this island, Tom. Okay, first thing I want to say.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
First thing I want to say is that, it's absolutely beautiful.
Yes.
And it's important to remember that we live and work in such an ideal
place. It's paradise.
Yes, yes, it absolutely no doubt is. I mean, I walk outside, the offices over at the church, and it's breathtaking. But it's kind of like Winesburg, Ohio, the novel about small-town USA. I mean, drive downtown, and it's like Main Street, only Latin style. I mean, it's vibrant, young, kid-friendly.
Awesome.
Yeah. There's also a lot of big personalities and some pretty big political divides on the island.
Well, you don't get that successful. You don't make enough money in your life without being successful, and you don't get that successful without being smart. And that comes with a certain amount of ego.
Yeah, money is what makes the key go around. And, one of the things that I find, facts are stubborn things. That's our slogan, okay?
Yes.
But some people on the island think feelings are facts,
It's a modern construct, yes.
I guess. I mean, but I also think there's a plan to sow division in the island for, as somebody said, not non-altruistic plans.
Political power.
Political power.
It's all one big power play.
Right.
And because the most successful people have the most money, and if you can't have the most money, you should have the most power. And those are the two things that form the tension on the key.
Right. And so they've kind of ginned up, some false narratives to be able to get people, to say, oh, we're being overtaxed. Oh,
Manhattan.
Corruption.
We're building skyscrapers on the key.
And there's some nefarious,
workforce housing skyscrapers.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
On the Village Green.
Yeah.
And you didn't see that plan?
Esplanade.
It's in the vision plan.
It's in the vision plan,
which is now binding.
So you have to ask yourself, why would anybody want power on Key Biscayne? I mean, it's not a...
This is my question.
Yeah. And, I will give you 310 million reasons. That's how much the infrastructure plan costs, and there's going to be a lot of contracts and a lot of money to be going around. And
so you think it's to flush money to their friends? It's like a crony game.
All I could do is go with instincts. You know, my journalistic instincts.
You can't say any of the things that came out of my mouth. I realize that you're a journalist.
Yes.
But blink twice if I think I'm right.
Look, I'm on top of it. I'm an investigative journalist, and I came here to do micro-local journalism with Tony Winton, and I'm going to be watching it. That's all I could tell you is I'm watching the players, and I'm investigating certain threads right now that hopefully will yield stories soon.
At the Key Biscayne misogynistic racists. What are the rest of those words on that chat? I love that chat. It's my honestly, it's bedtime stories for me.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it. I guess we're misogynistic.
The latex group, I love them. All right, anyway. So, I heard you don't like Arab Americans.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
How's this show going? You know, I am, well.
It's going great.
Okay, all right.
They obviously, I mean, people who have said this in the chat have obviously not followed my
lunatics
career. I
love them deeply.
Which is all online. You can see all the stories I've written about underprivileged people.
All right, so let's go back to some of the bigger stories. I think we were out of time on, like, walking down memory lane, but the budget passed.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
that's a big move, and it didn't take them until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Came damn close. There was somebody there who had his own budget, and he was like, "Why?"
He proposes an alternate budget.
An alternate budget.
That's so Key Biscayne.
It is.
Was he an accountant?
I don't know.
I'm sure he wasn't. He's a developer.
No, I think he might have been a connect. I think he said he was an accountant.
Okay.
Never mind all the months and months of work that's gone into the budget by staff and all the meetings.
And they don't realize the sheer amount of ego it takes to do that.
He was quite upset that they wouldn't entertain it. But, yeah. You know, it was the power of the CFO that just, you know, laid to waste all the criticism.
No, great. That was he did a great job. Did a fantastic job just wiping all that stuff. All right. You wrote an article about the mystery storm drain budget. I'm fascinated by this. Can you?
Oh, wait, which one are you talking about? The mystery storm drain budget.
So where Key Biscayne is getting money for a storm drain project.
Oh, yes.
The city manager has wrote a favorable letter, but the city manager didn't actually, and yet.
And yet the chats somehow turn that around that the village is corrupt. Well, listen, there was a $3 million that went to this Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce up in Wellington, Florida, nowhere near us,
mm-hmm.
for a stormwater sensor pilot project.
Sounds cool.
And the Orlando lawmaker who sponsored it said that in the budget request that Key Biscayne had written a letter of support. There was no letter of support, you know, and but they ended up getting the money, and
it's all sus to me.
That's very sus to me. Look, I'm not done with this story yet. I'm still following a number of threads, and I think that if the conclusion that my reporting will come to will be quite enlightening to a lot of people.
And where are we on the condo corruption story? Because that's still ongoing, too. By the way, merely mentioning that makes me misogynistic and racist. I understand that. But let's go there anyway.
Well, you know, the property manager is going through the court system. She has a trial date for January. See, the thing is...
But who else is going to get roped into it?
I don't think it's going to be anybody roped into it. Here's the thing.
You think she's a lone actor?
Absolutely.
She's
not.
Lee Harvey?
Well, I think
where is the grassy knoll in this story?
I think that there was a number of people who were ripped off, but mm-hmm. they don't want to go to the police. These units are owned by LLCs. These people are from Latin America.
Right,
they don't
want
to get involved.
Yep. Yep.
And
because police in their country is corrupt and horrible, so ours must be too.
Right.
Not saying it is, but
right. But that is their.
I get the mindset. I understand. Yeah. I wouldn't. I probably. So, I'm probably with them.
So they only. So I don't know if it's going to go any further. What's interesting? So I am working. You know, it's hard. It's we're a two-man job and a two-man outfit. And, you know, like I said, I would like the news to quiet down a little bit because I have been writing and reporting on condominium government, quasi-government for last couple of months.
Yeah, these private governments are crazy.
Yeah. So we would like to do more on that. We just can't get out from under the avalanche of news from this little island.
Do you know what that leads me to?
What?
If you find the kind of coverage the Key Biscayne Independent does to be valuable, to be important, and to affect your life and your community, you should go to kbindependent.org and hit the Donate Now button. Donate generously to hyperlocal, nonprofit journalism. There's your PSA for the day.
Thank you. We didn't even talk about today's story.
What's today's story?
Well, it's the missing sign-in letter. It's our local game of Clue. You know, it involved a, you know.
All right, let's do that. Let's do Clue. Can we? I swear I'll make the board.
Oh, yes.
I promise you I'll make the board. So,
absolutely.
So, who are the players? There's Tony Winton has to be on the board. Tony Winton did it.
Okay.
Tony Winton.
He could be Mr. Green.
Williamson. You know, yes. Manager Williamson. Yeah. All right. And Mayor Rasko.
Yeah.
Rasko. Okay. And then Fausto. Fausto's got to be on the board. Yeah. Fausto. Fausto did it with his tongue in the conservatory. I love you, Fausto. You know that. And you know I kid because I can. Who else is there? Well, that whole contingency, right? Louisa and Jennifer.
Yeah.
Louisa and Jennifer. I think that about rounds out our board.
Wait.
Is Melissa White on that on list? Melissa, or she's Princess Leia, though.
And
Jennifer Stern's butt trick. She's got to be on the list, too.
And how about that guy that nobody knows who it is?
Oh, Paul Nichols.
Yeah, Paul Nichols.
Paul Nichols. I love Paul Nichols. You know, Paul Nichols and I were having, well, I shouldn't say this on the air, should I? Paul Nichols and I were having drinks the other night.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was, he was filling me in on all the latest. Oh, my God. he's like Bansky.
I thought I saw him at Walgreens.
Yeah.
And I turned around the aisle. Gone.
All right. I've gotten into too much trouble today. I know this is going to end badly, so we should get out of it now.
Yes.
Thank you so much for making this a wonderful homecoming. I appreciate you guys inviting me to come back on after all of the destruction that I did last time.
It was so much fun.
All right, man. For the Key Biscayne Independent and Antisocial, I am Tom Mosloom.
And I'm John Pacenti.
Be safe, everyone. Hey, Will! You gonna run the close music or not?